Like, this is philosophy class. We're pursuing truth. And so you cannot just nod your head because I happen to look at you. You have to tell me the truth.
Welcome to Classical Etc. You're in the studio with Memoria Press.
Welcome to another episode of Classical Etc. I'm Jessica Gardner, and I'm here with our usual guests, Martin, Tanya, and Paul. And no matter how long you have been on the path of classically educating children, you have probably experienced some trials and some triumphs. And that is what we're going to talk about today. The moments of success and some flops that we've had in classical education. I am really excited to hear about your experiences. But before we dive in, as always, what we're reading. Tanya, what page number?
1,018. I've got like 100 pages left, and then the 100-page epilogue. And then I can put this baby to bed.
What is this now?
War and Peace? Oh, War and Peace.
How could you not remember? It's been for 2 months. That's right. I've read for 2 months.
Yeah.
So I'm getting there. I'm very, very close. And it's so good.
Yeah. It's not a burden at this point.
No, it is not a burden.
It's a joy.
But, you know, I leave for England in a week and I need to be done. I need not to carry that heavy book with me.
Yeah.
I'm going to take something very small.
Oh, yeah. But I bet the 200 pages seems tiny compared to...
Oh, it is? Oh,
you know, when
yes.
you look at the book, the
but you're
the
still
you've
holding
read.
The 1,200
yes,
page
Yes, you are
book.
Still holding the 1,200 pages.
You feel the weight of what you've
That's
done.
Right. That's right. I mean, trying to read it in bed and actually hold it up.
Oh, yeah. I've never even attempted that one. I'm like, no, this is not a bedtime book. It's too big.
Oh, Paul,
but
how about you?
I'm on like page 620 or something like that.
Ooh, you got a ways to go, started. But it just gets better and better.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I really enjoy...
You're reading War and Peace, too?
Yeah, Martin, get on the train.
I've already read it like 5 times. I think that's enough.
That feels like an exaggeration.
That's a half a life right there.
I was going to say.
You have not read it 5 times.
Well, maybe 4.
Oh, please. Oh, please.
It's like Abraham and God. We'll get you down to 1.
3.
1 time you read it. Yeah, no, I've had absolutely no time to read. Actually, since we've had foster kids in our house the past couple of weeks, I actually have been able to listen to a significant amount while they're going to bed, like because they need me in the room to fall asleep. And so I just put an earbud and listen to a book. Mm-hmm. But as I saw, like it can't be any book that I really want to engage
right.
with because it's just something to kind of keep my mind occupied while I'm just sitting there trying to be as motionless as possible. That keeps kind of rolling, but no, I was giving my students an exam yesterday and I thought, I'm going to bring my War and Peace book. And while they're taking their test, I can walk around and read. So I got a few pages read at least.
Yeah.
That's how I started.
Perfect.
But I thought, oh yeah, this really is enjoyable. We have find time to do it.
That's the thing. It's so big and so overwhelming that if you put it down for a bit, it's really hard to pick back up because you think, whoa, this is such a commitment.
Mm-hmm. Just the inertia.
But once you pick it up and start, and if you can just keep rolling a little every day, then it's more doable.
Because the last time my last spurt, I did at least
you did
like
a lot
300 of, pages or something
right.
in like less than a week. But also like... everything in my life sort of aligned where I had lunch breaks that I could actually use and had some time at night and, you
right.
know, and now my life is definitely not aligning to reading.
Well, War and Peace is one of those books you, when I'm out speaking that people, you end up talking about and people will say, well, so what do you like about it? And I'll just say, well, it's life. War and Peace is life. And life is long, hopefully. So the novel's long, but it's one you can live in for a while. And it's okay.
It is. You know? And it's I feel like the characters are so well developed.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Well, he's got time to develop them.
Yes, he does. Yes. And that is the thing. When I first started it, you know, I really was, they were all young and as they started maturing and you saw the difference between them, especially in the first war that they were involved in, it really matured them to a point where then they become more interesting people than they were at the beginning. It's all different generations of people, you know, different ages. And
Right. Well, I'm reading James Hankin. I'm still reading James Hankin's, speaking of long things, James Hankin's Virtue Politics. And I've been closing in on the end of this book for about 3 weeks now. you know, it's a big, thick thing. And it, but it, there's an index or the sources, the footnotes are quite a few pages. This is a good thing about it.
Yes.
And there's three appendices, but it's still 517 pages of actual reading. So I'm in the last 100 pages now, but I've mentioned this before. It's a book about political philosophy in the Renaissance. And it's all we hear about is Machiavelli when in fact he was not representative of the thinkers back then. The thinkers back then were not as self-interested as Machiavelli is. They were about virtuous leaders and therefore education, because in order to get a virtuous leader, you have to have one with a good virtuous education. And so it's just really refreshing to listen to. And he's just got all kinds of different angles on this that are I'm just really enjoying. And of course, our new book from Memoria College Press, A Defense of Classical Education. I'm sure producer Kuiper will put a graphic of this up on the screen, maybe. And you can purchase these at Memoria Press, Memoria College Books, which is a link on our Memoria College website. I really think this is the best book on classical education that's ever been written. The only exception possibly being Climbing Parnassus by...
Which we talked about last week. Yes, we talked about that. Tracy had told me he wouldn't have written Climbing Parnassus
if this had
been in print.
Yes, and Tracy does the introduction to this book, because I think this is why I knew about this originally, is because he mentions this book. Tracy Lee Simmons does in Climbing Parnassus. Right. So, but I've probably read this four or five times. Legitimately.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
That's more believable.
No, I do believe that.
No, because I read it every year, because I teach it in my introduction to classical education course for the college in the summer, which is coming up.
But
again,
even before that, 10 years ago, he would read it and come to me and say, why don't we publish this? And then 2 years later, he'd come back and say, why don't we publish this? I've just reread it. It's really great. We should publish it. And finally, it happened.
Yes, finally it happened. So it's and it's beautiful. It's got this great picture of the guy on front, and it looks like he means business.
It does, doesn't it?
R.W. Livingston, the author. Yes. So, yeah. So I'm really excited about this being out. I think that's something we want to identify ourselves with is a book of that high quality about classical education.
Yeah, that's terrific.
Lincoln Highway.
Yep. And I think we can all agree that an object in motion stays in motion. I just got to keep going.
Keep going. That's right. Have you gotten to Odysseus?
No.
Okay. Oh.
Okay.
That's one of the great scenes.
Keep going.
My motivation.
Keep going.
Okay.
Yes. I would like to interject and say I got an email from a listener that told me that she was on my side when it came to Amor Towers.
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry for you and for her.
And I was so happy that I am not alone in my objections.
And so it's not objections. You just think that...
I think he's overhyped.
You're alone in your principles.
He's overrated.
Yeah, he's overrated.
What other writer writing right now is that good? I don't
feel a need to say one writer today is
because
as good
you
as one
can't
of the greats.
Think of one. That's why.
No, I think his... I do think that his books are going to be around a long time. I do think they're that good.
Of the writers writing right now, I think he will be here in another 30, 40 years.
I don't know about Rules of Civility, but definitely A Gentleman from Moscow and Lincoln Highway, yes, I think will stay around.
Sorry, man.
But we'll see.
I'll find out. Y'all will probably be dead, so I'll find out.
Okay.
That's true.
He does have that on us.
Yes, he does.
Wow. Well, let's get to it then.
I think we should apologize, Martin and I, for last week's podcast where we talked for an hour because Paul wasn't here to shut us down.
That's my role, I suppose.
I suppose so. So we'll see if we can do better today.
With Paul Epps.
We'll see. We'll see what the ratings are. I'm sure they have to be great because who wouldn't want to listen to you and I talk for an hour? So if you missed it, that's one to definitely go back and get, and you can easily find it because it says 55 minutes.
Yeah, that was. The fewer people we have, the longer the show. It's
how does that happen? But Paul, to bring you back to the podcast, mm-hmm. I want to start with you. Mm. And let's start low and end high. So can you tell us whether it's a project you worked on at the press or in a classroom here, tell us about a trial, something that maybe you tried and it flopped.
Do I have to only keep it with here? Okay.
Something in classical education.
Yeah. What came to mind was when I tried to teach Lingua Latina before I came here, which is an immersion approach to Latin. And I say Latin from third grade and I'd gone through college and I tried to teach this. Like, I knew my Latin and it was an utter failure. Like, the kids kind of just looked at me, and these were kids that actually were used to going to the liturgy in Latin, but they would just look at me and go, we have absolutely no idea what you're trying to do or what you're saying to us. And so, yeah, that didn't last very long at all. And I realized it's a nice thought. Practically, it just doesn't work.
Immersion. To immerse students, before they even know their grammar forms or the vocabulary. Yeah. It's just a total.
Yeah. I mean, it's a wholly different thing if you're dealing with a toddler and you're speaking to them in multiple languages all the time. They pick it up, right? But in a classroom setting, immersion just doesn't work because they just don't have the exposure, the long enough exposure to it, mm-hmm. and you don't have the patience and the time to work through this for 4 years before they actually have to say something that's comprehensible.
So you're saying that people have a hard time conversing in a language they don't know?
I am saying that people
that's
have
an amazing principle. Some a lot of people don't understand that.
Yeah. I will also say that here, my first year of teaching here, there were many days teaching a class of seventh grade boys that I came out and I was like, I don't have control of these boys. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was, and I actually instituted a thing called the chair of frustration. And the chair of frustration was when they would get out of hand, I would just pull the chair out and I would sit in the chair of frustration in front of the class. And it indicated to all of them that, like, they've gone too far and I don't know what to do anymore. And it would generally calm them down and we could get started again. But yeah, that was my chair of frustration.
Well, that's just typical of any new young teacher is you really want them to like you. Mm-hmm. And I came into teaching, I was early 40s when I first stepped into a classroom to teach. And so I think I took a more motherly approach. I'd been homeschooling. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't really have that problem. I mean, I'm not saying I didn't have failures, but that wasn't one of them. I was probably maybe a little more strict than, you know, I took it to heart when Cheryl said, don't smile until December.
That's a good one. That needs to go in the sayings of Cheryl Lowe.
In your Lingua Latina class, did you have the flexibility to change things up when you realized it wasn't working?
Yeah. Good. It was fairly the Wild West at that school. And so, you know, I could kind of see the culture was headed that way. So it's like, I'll try it, you know? And then when that didn't work, I was like, no, not doing that, you know?
Well, and part of teaching when you have not done it before is just confidence. Mm-hmm. And students can shake your confidence. Mm-hmm. And so you have to establish real quick that you're in control of the classroom.
And they know when
and
they've shaken it.
They absolutely know mm-hmm. when you're vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have that confidence, your classroom is just not gonna work. And I, you know, after teaching for many years, you know, you walk into classrooms at schools you're visiting or whatever, and I remember one in particular, and there were three boys in the back and they were just talking and were not paying any attention at all. And the teacher who was there just did not know how to deal with it. And so I walked to the back of the room as I was teaching and I stood in front of those three kids Mm-hmm. The three boys in the back mm-hmm. of the room, and I talked directly to them. I asked all the questions of them, and they knew that that was what was going to happen if they didn't shape up. And so you could, you know, so you have to establish that real quick and then slowly let off on the
controls. That's right.
So,
that's
so
right.
They know they can't do that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, even this class I'm teaching this year, there's a particular class that I'm often teaching next to a student. You know, like there's a couple of students that they love to have fun. Mm-hmm. I like to have fun too, but.
And these are 11th graders.
These are 11th graders. And, you know, actually this was not a triumph, but a funny story. The other day I came in and we hadn't finished the reading I wanted to do the week prior, like reading it in class and discussing it. So I told them like, read it over the weekend. We'll come back. We'll discuss it. So I come into class on Tuesday and I'm like, you all read that, right? And I look at one kid and he nods his head. And then another child's like, no, oh, you didn't ask us to read that. And I was like, well, he read it. So somebody heard it. And he's like, no, I didn't read it. You were just looking at me. So I nodded my head. And I was like, okay, student A, we are here pursuing truth, right? Oh,
that's gonna solve the problem.
Like, this is philosophy class. We're pursuing truth. And so you cannot just nod your head because I happen to look at you. You have to tell me the truth. So
that's good. That is great. That's great.
Oh, and in the early days of Highlands, there was a student we had.
I know who it was.
Yeah. We'll just call him Terrence. And I finally just had to put him in the front desk, in the front in row, right in front of me. And then even then I would have to, you know, you'd go around asking questions, right? You know, Susie, you know, whoever. And then you'd go to Terrence and, you know, and then you'd ask him a question. He'd think, okay, he's not going to call on me for another 8 times. And then no, next time, Terrence, sometimes Terrence, until, you know, and he was just a high energy.
He
boy.
Was high energy. And one time I walked in and he was actually teaching your Latin class.
I think I made him do that as a punishment.
He was literally at the board teaching the class.
I think I did. I said, okay, you seem to know the subject. Here, go up to the board, please.
And then there was the time he jumped out of the second story window.
Yes, there was that time.
At too. Crescent Hill. He didn't get hurt. Of course.
Do we really want to advertise this?
Oh, well, Martin, a trial.
Oh, I think back to the early days of teaching. And it not really a trial. It's just, you know, things that you didn't know not to do, I guess would be the way. But, and so I remember teaching history. And this is also the early days of classical education, too. So you didn't have a good
back in the Roman and Greek times.
Roman and Greek times. That was the problem. Just I couldn't speak their language. You know, when we were all trying to figure out what to do, okay? And so I remember spending, like we were doing, everybody thought you had to teach history chronologically. Mm-hmm. So what better place to start than Egypt? So I think my first year I did Egypt the whole year. And you know, stuff like that. And I think, what a waste of time. So it's really just stuff. It's just, because I'm in my early days, we really didn't know what we were doing. We had to figure it out as we went along. And you know, after meeting Cheryl and working through all this stuff, you got to know that better. But we didn't know.
No, we all made the same mistakes together. Oh, we were all doing it corporately.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So it was just. Wasting time on things you didn't need to be spending so much time on and not getting through things fast enough. And
because we didn't have a developed curriculum, we were figuring it out. And so I would do projects that I would never do now. Mm. Teaching, just, you know, just thinking I need to develop this course. Mm-hmm. And it's just totally unnecessary. I interviewed somebody yesterday that teaches at another school here in the city, and she used to teach at a school that used our curriculum. Mm-hmm. And she said, then she goes to this other school and she's like, I have no curriculum. She said, I loved teaching at the previous school because everything was laid out for me. It was exactly what I needed to do every day, and all I had to do was prep it. And at this other school, I have what they call resources. And mm-hmm. so I'm creating my own curriculum, and it's awful, which is why she was interviewing with us for a job, because she doesn't want to do that anymore. She said it's just not effective. And, you know, teachers don't spend their time teaching. They spend their time developing. So that's what we were doing. We were developing. And so you just go overboard. You get a little bit too enthusiastic and try to do more than you need to when you just, I mean, really, it teaches itself, honestly.
Yeah, and I've said this for a long time, is that most schools do not have a curriculum. You know, an ad hoc collection of books that can be changed by any teacher at any time is not a curriculum, you know, and this is not well understood by anybody, really. There's a bunch of schools out there who just, there's something different that's taught every year, depending on the teacher, depending on their whims at the time. There's no consistency. And you have a curriculum department, literally. What do they do? I mean, because the teachers are having to write their own stuff,
right?
And they don't have any guidelines for it or anything. And so it's a real shame. Mm. Not, again, waste of time. This is the principle that's developing today, the theme.
Would that be your trial? Or
no, I mean, I do have trials in the classroom, but what I would consider my major fail was really in homeschooling and just... My big regret there is that I didn't relax and enjoy it, that I was so concerned with getting it done, with getting the laundry done, figuring out how to cook dinner, how to get to church for a meeting that night. And I really, now that it's all over, I really wish I had just basked in it more and really just enjoyed it more than I did. For me, it was a burden, and it was something that I fully believed in and would do again, but I think I'd do it better next time because I'd be more relaxed. I just would like the opportunity to try it as a relaxed person and not a nervous wreck because I didn't get all of my boxes checked off and my children didn't move fast enough and everything was an unorganized mess at the end of the day. And that's okay. That should have been okay. I mean, the main, I feel like a lot of times I lost sight of what we were doing and I was just checking boxes. And so that's my regret literally teaching, with my own children.
Teaching is the best thing and the worst thing. If you're not prepared or something's wrong, it's a terrible experience, but if you're doing it right and you know you're doing it right, the fulfillment that comes from that is just amazing.
On that topic of checking boxes and I was thinking about trials and stuff and the different sets of foster kids we've had, you know, like one needed to work on her math facts and the teacher even sent home math flashcards. I'm like, I have access to math flashcards, but okay, we'll take them, you know? And, you know, but it was so hard to establish a routine to make sure that got done every day, you know?
Well, I mean, you get caught up in that kind of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, just this morning, you know, I found out that, you know, the past week we've had this batch of kids in the school, they've been sending home like a reading log that we're supposed to fill out because they're kindergarten, first grade. And what book did we read at home that night? And I'm like, now I feel like a horrible parent because I'm not filling it out. But at the same time, I know that every night we're reading Bible story together. I might read 3 or 4 books.
Right.
But
you haven't filled out the
form. I haven't filled out the form, right? I'm not checking that box. But then I feel bad about putting that back in her bag in the morning going, I don't have time to fill that out, you know? and it's just those sorts of things too that just kind of pile up on you. When you talk about like basking in it, like, yeah, oh, we really enjoy reading books together. But I'm not like, but it's that added burden of just like, actually checking the box that can get to you and wear you down.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot, but I'd do it again.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
On that note, Paul, how about a triumph?
You know, the class I taught in 2019 to 2020, when I was the first time I taught the philosophy class, I would make comments about like this shouldn't just be a subject you study at school and then you forget about, right? Like this should be part of your life. Like I told them, I mean, we get together, we have discussion nights, like we'll get together, we'll talk about philosophy. Well, you know, and I said, but I'm not hosting that while you all are still in school. Once you're graduated, let me know, come out to the farm. We'll have a night together. You know, and they came back a year later, you know, when they graduated seniors and they said, we want to come and we want to discuss philosophy. And I thought, wow, wow. You know, like that was that, you know, and I've had students reach out outside of the classroom where I realized this is impacting them way more than just, can they pass the test? And that's worth every,
oh yeah,
that's every hour of labor to try to,
that's right,
be ready for class and grade their essays and check off those boxes. It's worth it when they come back and they, you know, and they ask for that. And I had one student, I taught her in eighth grade. I wasn't teaching her philosophy. I was teaching her the Aeneid. And she always would ask, this is my first year of teaching. This is when I'm mad at those seventh grade boys, but I had a class of eighth grade girls that were largely well-behaved. But they had been so well-trained by the lower school that they needed to know exactly what the right answer was for the study guide that I start, anytime that student would say, well, you didn't cover, you know, this question, or what should I put down for this question? I'd say, well, what do you think you should put down for that question? Like, give me an answer. That sounds great. Put it down, you know? And then we started having deeper and deeper discussions about like, what are the themes in the Aeneid and like what of them and how does that affect our lives? And I saw about halfway through the year, all of a sudden it clicked in her mind that she started thinking more deeply instead of just what's the right answer. And then it was what, 4 years later when she's a junior, I walked into her classroom showing a visitor around where she was studying, the class was the philosophy class. And she articulated a question at that point I would have had time articulating. And I saw that and I thought, I'm going to take credit for that one because I started it in eighth grade, right? Like I started that process and it's just so great to see where those kids end up years later. Because it really does set their lives on a trajectory.
Martin, how about you?
Well, the thing that, and it's a lot of, you know, you realize things looking back on them. You didn't realize it at the time, but having an order that you can use to teach something is so comforting. You can rest in that. You know, you're nervous when you're having to try to figure out how to teach something. And one of the great things about our Latin program, this is what I think of, is, and we've talked about this before, back in the day when we would arrive at school and be walking into our classrooms and Cheryl will just have completed the new chapter in
at
first
2 o'clock
form,
in the morning.
Yeah. And at 2 o'clock in the morning, and we would be handed the lesson as we were going into the classroom.
You
so we were teaching words we did not know, some of us, and maybe a grammar lesson that would be new to us. But her system of instruction that we use in our textbooks here was so good that it didn't matter. You knew how to teach it. Because it had been the same way you taught it before. And of course, this is in Latin and we're teaching it grammatically, which is grammar is the order of language, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's an orderly way to do an orderly thing. And I remember, you know, because you were talking about, you know, conversing in Latin and all this stuff that looks really good to a lot of people. And I remember, because at our school, you'll be teaching and people can walk, visitors can walk in the room on these tours anytime. And it's amazing and we go do that ourselves sometimes. And every time you walk in, they're doing something productive. There's never any time when they're not doing something that they're learning. It's pretty amazing actually. So I remember sitting in the Latin class one morning and I'm doing that little drill where you have this room full of kids. And back then we had like 20, I had as many as 20, 23 kids in a classroom. But if it's orderly, that's less of a problem, right? So doing
well, and
little,
if they're not in kindergarten,
Right. I mean, and we're talking junior high. I think was this class, it was Latin class, and so one of my exercises, what I would say, okay, I want the form of the Latin word for earth in the dative singular, and nobody knew who I was going to call on, and so I would just scan the room. You know, Terrence would be right in front of me sometimes. But I would look around the room and I would just pick somebody at random. And so every single person in the room had to be thinking because they could be chosen.
Called on, yeah.
And I remember we had these visitors that day and they came in and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to be like the most boring thing they have ever seen. This is not going to be a good look, right? Because it's not exciting. And so it was like 8 people. You know, they came in and filed them back. And I'm doing this with the kids in this, you know, silence. I want, you know, the Latin word for servant in the genitive plural. Just wait. And they're all having, and you give them time to think. And then boom. And I thought those people were going to think this is terrible. Well, I heard back. They thought it was incredible, you know. But that order, and once you establish that order, particularly, it doesn't take long in a Latin class, I don't think, because it is so orderly. After 3 or 4 weeks, you realize you've got the system down. Everyone understands the system. Mm-hmm. It's working. It's efficient, and you just feel good. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's not any real necessarily particular instance, but it just goes to the point that if you have an orderly way to do something, it's easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
And what that reminds, you know, you always hear you learn so much from your failures, but you learn from your successes too.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's what it reminds me of.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, Tanya, how about you?
So I don't have a triumph that is my personal triumph, but I think it's a triumph of classical education. And I feel like I saw it because I've been listening for 2 days to students reciting all 70 stanzas of Horatius at the Bridge, 11 and 12-year-olds, 6th graders. And this started, Cheryl, for years, wanted us, she really thought our students should memorize Horatius at the Bridge. I'm not sure how she settled on 6th grade to be the age when they would do it, but she gave Matt Dickey and I were both teaching 6th grade. And she gave us the challenge to see which of our classes would have the most students who memorized it. And that's where it started. Well, now it's become so much a part of our culture that the majority of our 6th grade students do it. And the triumph, it's a very hard poem. And it is 70 stanzas, and it takes 20 minutes to recite if you recite it fluently. Yesterday had a student that it took 35 minutes, so he wasn't all that fluent, but he did get through it. But it really should take about 20 minutes if you do it right. And like out of 30, 32 students, I think 26 actually memorized these 70 stanzas. And they just expect that they're going to do it now, and they look for it. But this is the first time that we say to them, this is, you're on your own for this. We're not memorizing this in the classroom. We definitely go through it for several weeks at the beginning of school, and we go through the entire poem to make sure that they know what they're memorizing and what they know the story, they know what it means. And if a student gets stuck, you can remind them where they are in the story and they can get right back into whatever stanza they're on, because they really, our teachers do a great job making sure they do understand it. Mm-hmm. But it has just the thought that they can do this. I mean, I haven't memorized this poem. I've listened now to 8 students in the past 2 days. And then this week, I also listened to the videos that were sent to us of 3 homeschoolers doing it. And so more and more people are doing it, but these kids think this is possible. They don't think, well, who could ever do this? Who is going to do this? I'm 12 years old. There is no way. But they do. And they don't they don't bat an eye.
They know they're capable.
They absolutely do. And I think that is a huge triumph. They are just in the sixth grade. They're halfway through their education and they've done this. Mm-hmm. So of course they're going to be ready to do philosophy in the 11th grade because this education sets them up for success. And I think that is a huge triumph and why I think Livingston would agree with me that, you know, that that is one of the huge benefits is that they know they can, they understand what they're capable of and they're willing to take that next step forward, to actually step out and attempt something that that we might think, no way.
No. However, I will say that as the grandfather of a fourth grader, who I'm sure this will change as he gets closer to this, but who quivers in fear of the prospect.
Well, one of them told me today after he finished, he said, I am so glad that is over with.
But imagine the sense of achievement that you have.
That's right. Oh, he was so proud. I love because I always, when they get to the very last stanza, I always am looking straight at them. I just quit looking at my book because I can see, and you can see when they start that last stanza, they know they've made it. Yeah. And they just get, the smile just gets bigger and bigger. Bigger and bigger as they get to the very last line, and then it's done.
We did it.
And I think part of their ability to kind of take it on, and the fact that most of the kids decide to do it, is also how it's presented to them.
Yes,
it's not like, ooh, this is going to be really tough, and I don't know, many of you aren't going to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. It's a no. This is you know, this is what we do.
Yes,
and you know, you and it's really presented as something doable and achievable, which it is.
Yes.
And I think that gives them the confidence to bite into it.
I do too. And it has at our school. It has become the culture of the school. And so they just know when they get to sixth grade, this is what they're going to do. And I watched that happen too. After we had done it for a couple of years, I watched then parents coming in this summer and saying, can we go ahead and get Horatius at the Bridge because we want to start working on it now. Hmm. And that's when it was becoming the culture. And now it just is. Everybody just knows this is your rite of passage.
Right. And it's good. It's good to have those things, academic versions of rites. Of
yes.
Passage.
And I'm so proud of them, you know, of that, because they did do it on their own. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had the help of their parents, but it was up to them. It's not required, but they all chose to do it, to attempt this really difficult thing. And so when they actually do it, it's just a beautiful thing to see.
Oh, that's a great note to end on. A triumph. Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, thanks guys for sharing, coming up with your trials and triumphs. And thanks for joining us. We hope that you enjoyed this along the way on your own trials and triumphs with classical education. For more information about the Horatius at the Bridge book, you can go to memoriapress.com and memoriacollege.org for the Memoria College book. Yeah, we'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us today on Classical Etc. by Memoria Press. If you like what you heard, you can follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more about Memoria Press, please go to memoriapress.com. This has been Classical Etc. We're so glad you joined us, and we'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Memoria Press Podcast Network, providing a classical Christian perspective on the world of education. To learn more about Memoria Press, visit us at memoriapress.com. To connect with us, find us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.